morning, and welcome to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Marisa DeMarco, a reporter with KUNM's Public Health New Mexico Project. Today we're talking about paid sick leave. Nearly 40% of employees in the United States don't have paid sick leave. So when they get sick or injured, or when their kids are sick or hurt, they can either power through and go to work anyway, or they can take the day off and lose money. The magazine Fortune reported last month that white-collar workers and government employees are the groups most likely to have paid sick leave, and three-quarters of low-wage workers don't have it. In Albuquerque, voters might be able to make the call on this issue. They could choose in November whether to make it law that all employers in the city provide some sick leave to workers, but that all depends on whether the question makes it onto the ballot. We'll hear from County Clerk Maggie Toulouse-Oliver about that a little later in the hour. The ballot initiative does face opposition from local business associations who say requiring small businesses to provide paid sick leave could cause financial hardship, decrease the number of jobs available overall, and conflict with existing policies around time off. Andrea Serrano is the deputy director of organizers in the Land of Enchantment, also called OLE, which is part of the coalition that is working to put the question of paid sick leave before voters. Thanks for being here today, Andrea.
Thank you for having me.
So, Andrea, you met with folks a while back to determine that this was the next issue that your organization was going to tackle. What are some of the reasons that this became priority for OLE?
Well, you know, so for many, many weeks, our members were coming together and talking about issues that were affecting them. And our membership are everyday working New Mexicans with families who are going to school, who are working in a variety of different types of jobs. And what kept coming up to the top was the need for paid sick leave. A lot of our members who are parents were talking about the fact that they have to choose between taking their child to school sick or staying home with their child so they can recuperate and, you know, or going to work sick themselves so that they don't miss a day of pay. Many, many people in Albuquerque as well as throughout New Mexico are living paycheck to paycheck, and any kind of disruption in their pay is going to make it's going to mean disaster for the month, if not for several months. So, you know, working with the Healthy Workforce ABQ Coalition, which is made up of OLE, Strong Families New Mexico, El Centro de Igualdad y Derechos, SWAP, the New Mexico Center on Law and Poverty, as well as many others, we came together and with our members started forming this legislation, this ordinance for paid sick leave. And it's gone through, you know, it's gone through a process. And last summer it went through the city council process, which, you know, Mayor Barry came out and said that he was going to veto any sort of legislation. And it sort of took the opportunity for public debate away by sort of just, you know, unilaterally deciding that he was going to veto it. And so instead we took it to a ballot initiative. And what we found is that everyone in Albuquerque, for the most part, supports having paid sick leave. It polls at 79% support among voters across all kinds of ideologies. We were required to collect a little bit over 14,000 signatures. We were able to collect about 24,000. And most people we spoke to, regardless of their job, regardless of their political ideology, regardless of the part of the city that they live in, they really support this measure. Included in that are dozens of small business owners who have signed on as supporters of the Healthy Workforce Act. In a city like Albuquerque, where 43% of workers don't have paid sick leave, and New Mexico ranks last for having paid sick leave in the nation, choosing between work and lost wages isn't something that our families should have to do. And people in Albuquerque know that. The voters of Albuquerque understand that, including small business owners. They understand how this benefits their business.
And one of the things that came up, too, is this can be about kind of the day-to-day getting ill, or also when people are facing more major kind of medical situations that they have to deal with. So this is not just like a cold and flu issue. This is all kinds of ailments that people deal with.
It's all kinds of illness. It's also being able to care for a loved one or a family member. It also protects people who are survivors of violence, either domestic violence or sexual violence, so that they can have time to actually take care of, you know, of themselves.
Mm-hmm. And that's actually written into the ordinance,
that's
right?
Written into the ordinance.
Paid sick leave applies to people who are dealing with domestic violence, sexual assault, stalking.
Yes. Yes, all of that. And the definition of family is also very broad, because we know that we come from all types of families. And so this definition is actually, it's very broadly applied, because we understand that New Mexico families look like lots of different families, and everybody deserves the chance to be healthy.
And now this issue disproportionately affects low-wage workers, right?
Yes.
And that's something that we're seeing, like, in national statistics, that this is something that affects, like, the lowest rung of earners.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, when we're talking about the economy that we're living in, Albuquerque hasn't recovered from the recession in 2008. And so when we're thinking about low-wage workers living paycheck to paycheck, missing 8 hours worth of pay is going to mean the difference between paying bills and paying the rent, having to choose one over the other. You know, and I think that when we talk about wanting to support business, this is actually a pro-business ordinance. It's unfortunate that a lot of times we're polarized in this issue, that it's painted that workers versus business owners, when in all reality, many, many business owners we've spoken to already offer this benefit. They understand and value their employees. They understand that healthy employees means low turnover. It means more productivity at work. It means a healthier economy. And that's what everyone is striving for. And so, you know, I think that really what we're pushing toward is really bringing up and boosting Albuquerque's economy on the local level.
Yeah. And there's also a health component to this too, right? Like, when people go to work with an illness, they spread it to their customers, to their coworkers, or when kids go to school with illness, it spreads to other kids.
One out of five foodborne illnesses is the result of a food worker who's ill.
Wow.
So they're transmitting, you know, their illness through your food. And it isn't food service workers who are the only kind of low wage workers. We're also talking about elder caregivers. We're talking about early educators. We're talking about people who work in grocery stores, who work in retail, who work in all sorts of different types of jobs. And it isn't always low wage workers who don't receive the benefit of paid sick leave. And so, mm-hmm. you know, when we think about all of the people we come into contact with during the day, you know, we want our community to be healthy. It is a public health issue. And again, it's something that can have devastating effects on a family.
And that ends up costing money, too, when people are sick, when you go to the doctor, or whether you just have to take time off. There's a lot of ways that even just minor illnesses can become kind of expensive.
Right. Yeah. Right. They become, if they're not taken care of immediately, they can actually become something worse. Also, in thinking about, you know, I'm thinking about today is the first day of school. And so what are all the things we do to get ready for the first day of school? Haircuts, school supplies, new clothes, shoes, backpacks, all of those things that go into the first day of school, the new school year. If families can't afford to buy those things, then it disrupts the child's entry into a successful school year. And when we're getting haircuts and buying shoes and buying clothes, that money is going right back into Albuquerque's local economy. That's what people are spending their money on. That's what families are spending their money on. And when you're missing wages because of illness, then there is no money to spend. There isn't this magical pot of money to spend.
All right. And we want to hear from you today, too. Do you agree with Andrea? Are you a worker, maybe, without paid sick leave? Or do you think putting the burden on businesses with a citywide law like this would hurt the local economy? Call 277-5866 or toll free at 877-899-5866. You can follow this conversation on Twitter today too. That's at KUNM News. We've got Dr. Lance Chilton on the line. He's a pediatrician in Albuquerque. Good morning, Dr. Chilton.
Good morning.
What impact do you see in your practice of parents not having the option to take paid time off when their kids are sick?
Well, what I see most often is that diseases that could have been nipped in the bud early become more severe, and children become sicker and end up missing more time. Their parents end up missing more time, and there's sort of a snowball effect.
Yeah, so what are some of the potential effects of people not coming to see you as soon as they should?
Well, infections can spread. infections that start out being minor. The famous infected hangnail becomes a finger infection, becomes a hand infection, becomes something that you hospitalize the kid for.
Mm-hmm. Do you think kids going to school when they're contagious or parents going to work after catching something means that cold and flu season lasts longer?
Well, I certainly do, and we have good evidence to show that during flu season, kids miss school, number one, and number two, that they transmit it to their parents. Parenthetically, if kids get flu vaccine, then parents don't get flu.
So do you think that there should be laws mandating that employers offer paid time off?
I do.
And can you?
I do.
Yeah. Do you think it would help families and some of the people that you see be more healthy throughout the year?
Yes. I've spent my career working with children who really need care. And their parents tend to earn low incomes and can't afford to take unpaid leave. They just can't afford to forego even a couple of hours of money off their paycheck.
Right. Well, thanks so much for talking with us this morning, Dr. Shelton. I appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you.
We're going to take a call now from Sarah in Albuquerque. Good morning, Sarah.
Yes, good morning. Yes. You know, that, like she said, that I know that the six-day leave vote will pass. Because you know what? We have over 50,000 minimum wage workers in our county. And the thing is that the workers do not choose when and how they're going to sick, and they don't choose their sickness. The sickness chooses them. So it's not a deliberate part of the fault of the workers. And so, you know, I really feel that we all need to come out and vote for this. You know, we'll have early voting starting October 4th. The election day is up, obviously, November 8th. But the 243 vote, 243-8683, we could ask them to call for our to vote by mail or absentee. But, you know, I did have to say that there was I bought an ice cream at a Circle K, and the lady had a flu. And all she did was touch my ice cream and hand me the change. And I had a flu for the next 2-3 weeks. Just awful. And you know what? I did not get mad at her because I did. I knew that she was she had no choice. She had to go to work sick with a flu, or otherwise she's going to be unable to pay the rent and get thrown out on the street or not eat. So I did not get. I just accepted it as a part of life. But you're right. You know what? They do spread this flu, cold, everything to everybody. And then they can't, we don't have any sick day leave. So it hurts not only the workers, not only the business, but it affects the whole community.
Yeah. So is that right, Andrea? Do we have a disproportionately high number of minimum wage workers?
We have an extremely high rate of workers who don't have paid sick leave. 107,000 workers in Albuquerque alone don't have paid sick leave. And when you look at our population and you look at who isn't receiving paid sick leave, once again, it's low-wage workers who are having to make the choice between paying the rent or paying the bills. And, you know, there isn't a lot of wiggle room for people. I've heard workers say, you know, those 8 hours make all the difference for 3 months. It's mm-hmm. 3 months that my budget will be thrown off, just missing a few days' work. And you know, it's It's really great when you're hearing supporters talk about paid sick leave and when you hear unlikely supporters talk about paid sick leave.
Mm-hmm.
So many stories we heard talking to people when we were gathering petitions meant, you know, people were talking about how they just wanted to see everybody having the same benefit that they did. One of our members who is a retiree said, you know, this doesn't directly benefit me, but it benefits me in so many different ways. Because she understands that all of the people she comes into in, you know, that she interacts with are going to benefit from having paid sick leave, which ultimately does benefit her. And so the really beautiful thing about people in Albuquerque is that they want to see each other doing better. Mm-hmm. That's why we saw minimum wage passed in 2012 with 68% of the vote. And that's why we see 79% of Albuquerque voters supporting paid sick leave. That's why we were able to surpass our 14,000 mark for signatures and hit 24,000. And had we had more time, we would have probably kept going and getting thousands more, because people in this city understand the value of each other.
All right. Well, we're talking about paid sick leave for workers today and whether businesses should be required to provide it. This is the KUNM Call-In Show, and I'm Marisa DeMarco with KUNM's Public Health New Mexico Project. Have you ever had to take your sick kid to school because you couldn't afford to take the day off work? Or are you a small business owner who can't imagine shouldering the extra expense of paid time off? Even if you're not in Albuquerque, we want to hear from you. Give us a call at 277-5866 or toll free at 877-899-5866 or follow the newsroom on Twitter at KUNM News. We're going to take a quick break.
This Saturday, starting at 9 a.m., the Children's Hour will learn about some simple strategies to promote safe habits for kids as we head into the school year. Plus, we'll have an in-studio performance with the Austin Lounge Lizards. Great music, a family events calendar, the KUNM Kids Birthday Club, and so much more. The Children's Hour, Saturdays from 9 to 10 a.m. on KUNM.
I see a big tax deduction in your future, $500, maybe more. I see you walking around an old car, or is that a truck? I see you calling 888-KUNM-CAR. I see a tow truck hauling it away. Yes, it's all here in my crystal ball, the big tax deduction. You getting member discounts to KUNM's 50th anniversary events. The magic starts with one phone call to 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Marisa DeMarco. We've been speaking to Andrea Serrano of Olay about paid time off and whether businesses in Albuquerque should be required to provide it. Jason Espinosa is the president of the New Mexico Association of Commerce and Industry. Thanks for being here, Jason.
Thanks for having me.
Do you think a mandate to provide some paid sick leave could harm business?
You know, we do. And one thing that I just want to make clear, too, is we're not opposed to paid sick leave. That's not the question that's before us. The question before us and potentially the voters is, are you in support or against the proposed ordinance and the proposed ballot initiative? And our feeling is, too, you know, while it may provide some people more benefits, it will come at the expense of many other everyday working New Mexicans who will see reduced benefits, reduced hours, and less jobs. And as Andrea pointed out earlier in the show, any disruption in their pay is really harmful to them and providing for their families, meeting rent. But if this ordinance passed, that's exactly what we'll see, is disruption in pay through those reduced benefits. And that's not just something that we came out with in theory. What we did is we have over 500 members. We put this out to a survey and said, okay, here's the ordinance. How are you going to have to deal with this? How would you react? And what are you going to have to do to meet the mandate? And those are the things that they said, the top three things would reduce benefits, reduced hours, and reduced workforce, which, again, is just disruption in pay. And one of the things, you know, and it's interesting, I agree with Andrea on a lot. We do have a, you know, high disproportionate amount of low-income workers here in the state. And what ACI does is we try to create the business environment so we're creating more opportunities, more competition, so that businesses have to compete for those employees, offer more benefits. So we are fully in support of paid sick leave on a voluntary basis and trying to create the environment where they have to compete for those employees. But we do think that the mandate as written is not going to be good for New Mexico, and for a couple of reasons. One of the things that we've seen nationwide is a trend towards sort of one bank paid time off systems. And that's actually been beneficial to employers, but actually more beneficial to employees, because back in the old days when you had a sick leave track and a vacation track, well, I had to tell my employer what I was doing. And employers don't necessarily want to know. And it works better for the employee if they can just say, I'm taking a day off. I'm not going to tell you if I'm I don't have to tell you if I'm sick or going to Disneyland. That's none of the employer's business. Unfortunately, the way that we, our attorneys, have read the ordinance is that it would do away with the one bank PTO system, which is what a lot of the employers have, and it'd have to go back. In the ordinance, there's some language where, you know, I think they're trying to capture and grandfather them in. Unfortunately, it's not well written. And it's not going to have the effect that they intended. And so the effect that it's going to have is a split bank system, which is going to be a reduced benefit for employees. Right now, say an employer offers 60 hours of paid time off. Mm-hmm. Under the mandate, I'm not going to remember the numbers right in front of me, say it's required 56 hours a year for paid sick leave. Well, it's going to reduce, it's going to say, okay, now 56 out of that hours are sick leave, now only four are vacation. To me, that doesn't benefit the employee. The one bank system did. And so we're looking at a couple of those things. It's the way the ordinance is written. And Andrea said, you know, one thing that we were disappointed about is that the ballot initiative really did stifle that conversation. A lot of these initiatives, the way the ordinance is written, the devil's in the details. And that's why we have the city council process. That's why we have the state legislative process, because a bill, you know, as much as, you know, we write legislation at the state level, we never get it right on the first try. It goes through a process for a reason. So we have many stakeholders looking at it, different perspectives, different sides of the aisle, and that makes a better bill at the end. Unfortunately, with the ballot initiative, that's not an option, and we're really disappointed in that.
So you're saying that, you know, it would conflict with people's existing paid time off policies, but also that it might reduce the benefits that people have? Because it seems like it's an added benefit. Why do you think it would reduce benefits?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things, and we've talked about it, and it's a conversation here in the city, we haven't fully recovered from the recession yet. So this is really going to hit a lot of our small businesses who continue to struggle, haven't come through fully on the recession. And so what happens is with any mandate, there's always a cost. Unfortunately, there is. We wish there wasn't, but there is. And so if they're going to have an added cost in one place and they're not doing well and not successfully thriving and bringing in new business, that cost is going to come at the expense of somewhere else. And and based on the survey that we've sent out, reduced benefits in other areas, whether it's the vacation leave, whether it's other benefits that they see, reduced hours and lost jobs is going to be the result. That cost has to be made up somewhere.
And do you think this would present a challenge for people looking to start new businesses?
Certainly it does. I mean, anytime a prospective business owner or an entrepreneur looks at starting a business, they write a business plan. They're looking at the full costs of what is the regulatory structure, what is the cost structure to start a business here in Albuquerque, or even to relocate a business here in Albuquerque. And at the end of the day, if there's not the business environment that makes us more competitive, people aren't going to start businesses. Businesses aren't going to move to New Mexico. And what that means is the status quo remains, and we're going to continue to have a high poverty rate. What we need to do and everything that we ask is, how do we get New Mexico more competitive? How do we make Albuquerque more competitive so that we can bring in jobs, create economic opportunities, create social mobility opportunities so that we can break the cycle of poverty?
So Carol White of the New Mexico Restaurant Association mentioned that businesses might also have to pay legal fees to redo their policies. So do you think there are other hidden costs that could crop up because of the ordinance?
Oh, certainly. And that's why, again, the devil's in the details. You know, it's a 7-page ordinance. Anytime you have something that's 7 pages, there's going to be complexities in it. And the everyday average Joe who wants to start a business in Albuquerque, whether they're selling cupcakes, whether they're the deli store owner, it's complicated of 7-page ordinance. It's complicated for the voter to understand, and it's complicated for them to understand. So they're going to have to hire an attorney to look at it, make sure they're complying with it, make sure they're tracking it correctly, because the business owner wants to do right. If it is in place, they will follow it, but it's going to come at an expense, and it's going to come at the expense of the everyday New Mexican.
All right, we're going to take a call from Mike in Albuquerque. Good morning, Mike.
Are you on the air?
You're on the air.
Okay. What I'd like to mention is that people need to save money anyhow before this sick leave thing goes into effect. If it does, people need to set aside money anyhow. It just needs to be. And one of the things I wanted to bring out was that I've been in business for over 30 years. People from rural situations know how to save money. People from urban situations don't know how to save money.
So that's saving just, money
that's
for
a long-term, long thing I've noticed over all these years.
So saving money for in the event of illnesses and stuff like that, that's what you're talking about.
anything. We used to call it saving money for a rainy day.
Right.
And that just is kind of a lost art, it seems. The other thing is, as a small business, I've spent over 30 years being everybody's parent. It just feels like the more that's asked out of the employer, it just leads us more to the feudal system where employers are the guardians of these people, and they don't really have their own life, and they need for somebody to take care of them.
All right, I'm going to let Andrea respond to that. Andrea?
Actually, I'm glad that Mike has called in and brought up the issue of saving money. I think a lot of our community members who are members of our organizations have definitely expressed the same value, that they want to save money. But in this economy, they have found increasingly that that is harder and harder to do, and that's impossible to do. So I think that, you know, this isn't an issue of whether or not people can or can't save money, or willing or not willing to save money. The reality is that in the workplace, people need the opportunity to be healthy. And part of that is having time to recover from illness or to care for a sick loved one. A couple of things about this ordinance that are really important is that, you know, that existing PTO policies are not going to be disrupted. So this ordinance sets a base for people who already do not offer paid sick leave. What that means is that if an employer's PTO policy or, you know, bank policy meets or exceeds this ordinance, then they're not affected by it. And mm-hmm. and it's really important to understand that. And for someone, you know, for business owners, like Mike, who are talking about, you know, really, really wanting people to be really responsible, I think workers want the same thing. Workers definitely want to have that same sort of sense of responsibility, and part of that is being able to take care of themselves, so I think it's really important to keep that in mind.
All right. Well, we've got Alan Parkman on the line. He's an economist and a professor emeritus. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning.
Let's start with your take on the proposed Albuquerque ordinance. What do you make of it?
Well, regrettably, economics is often described as the dismal science, and one of the primary reasons that comes up is we're hearing a lot about the benefits of the proposed ordinance. what unfortunately occurs and is often ignored is the costs, which have often been discussed, is, you know, I think it's important to recognize the whole idea of labor markets, is that there's an interaction between employers and employees in a way that a level of compensation is generated for a variety of jobs, all the way from fast food restaurants to maybe university professors. And in that level of compensation, benefits are very important. And certainly it's important to recognize that like 70% of private firms in the United States provide sick leave because they find it attractive to their employees. All the benefits we're hearing about, lower turnover, happier workers, all these are benefits to workers, and to the extent that employers accommodate that, it's benefits to the employers. The problem is there's also costs, and the costs become particularly relevant to smaller businesses, where bigger businesses can provide these things. They have payroll offices. They have human resource programs. They incorporate these things, and they find them very beneficial, and they offer them. But for a lot of other employers, particularly maybe in situations of low income that we're hearing so much about, they're hiring workers that are perceived to be not highly productive and therefore warrant somewhat lower wages. And certainly the workers would love to have mandatory paid sick leave, but to the extent that that's a cost imposed upon the employer is going to have to find some way to adjust. It's interesting that even proponents like the New Mexico Voices for Children have already noted that this ordinance would impose a cost in New Mexico of over $200 million. Where is that money going to come from? And I think the reaction would be the benefits to workers are very, very attractive, especially for those, obviously, who don't have it. But to the extent that it imposes additional costs, both in terms of dollars and in terms of inconvenience, particularly to smaller employers, those employers are going to react in some way. The whole idea in economics of unintended consequences is that when confronted with higher labor costs, the employers are going to have to adjust, either reduce other fringe benefits, certainly maybe to the extent that they're above the minimum wage, reduce wages in the future, and, of course, adjust the hours that the workers work. So, as I say, I think it's the balancing thing here. I think one recommendation I hear so often about these concerns is that 70% of employers provide it. For example, relatively low wage employers such as Walmart has sick leave. If you think, as an employee, that in terms of your family or yourself, sick leave is important, then there are places like Walmart where you can get those kind of benefits. On the other hand, for example, if you're in your 20s and you're single with no obligations, sick leave may not be important to you, and therefore employers who don't provide it is fine and dandy for you. But certainly for the people that have these deep concerns about the potential cost to them of sick leave without pay, there are employers out there who provide it, and it's important for people like that to seek out those employers. And those employers will get a higher quality workforce, et cetera. But the other employers who cannot afford it are going to have workers who are willing to accept that, and yet at the same time, they avoid the record keeping and things like that that would be required by this ordinance.
So let me ask you, if we leave it up to the labor market as we have so far, what do we do for the 40% of workers who don't have paid sick leave? So far it has been left up to the labor market, right? Like, this has been unregulated in the United States and in Albuquerque. And it's estimated that a lot of folks don't have this paid sick leave. So if that's the result of the labor market, then what do you do for the other 40%?
I mean, watch the 40%. Is the data I just looked at had close to 70% in the private sector have a sick leave, and virtually everybody in the public sector has it. So the percentage is probably more like 25 or 20% who don't have it. And I think, as Mike mentioned earlier, there's clearly a clear alternative. And say, if you have a very low income job, which is frustrating to anybody, but the bottom line is the employer is paying you what the employer thinks they can afford to pay you, and if they give you sick leave, they're going to pay you less. Or they're going to give you fewer hours. It's not a free lunch. I mean, that's the dismal science thing. There's a lot of benefits to the workers, but what people want to try to ignore if they can is the potential costs. And particularly for these low-wage workers, if the employers are confronted with higher costs, then the employers are going to react in some way, often to the detriment of the workers.
All right. Dr. Pachman, do you think this would have an impact on the local economy? Hello?
Yeah, well, I don't think it's going to be a do or die. I mean, clearly, we could have a whole another day talking about the local economy. I mean, I think that it would certainly be a real problem. The overall economy probably has not affected a great deal. I think the particular problem would be for low-income workers, for which the ordinance is intended to benefit, and I think often in many cases they will not benefit, and it certainly will be very adverse to smaller businesses who will find additional reporting and labor costs. So I think the overall economy is probably not a big deal, but for a lot of individuals, it's going to be very, very unpleasant.
All right. Well, thanks so much for talking with us this morning, Dr. Pachman.
Okay, thank you.
I'm going to give everyone a chance to respond, and we have a lot of calls coming in. But first, I want to talk to Bernalillo County Clerk Maggie Toulouse-Oliver. She's here to talk about some of the technical problems with getting this ordinance on the ballot. Good morning, Maggie.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Good. How are you?
Well, thanks.
So it's recently come up that there's a space issue with this ordinance. What's the problem?
Well, let me give a little bit of background and context for everybody. So first and foremost, we have a general election coming up on November 8th, and the county and my office in particular is charged with conducting an election for all federal, state, and county offices and questions that are on the ballot, and the Amasca Flood Control Authority, which is also a statutory requirement. Those are what we are required to conduct an election for. It so happens that the city of Albuquerque is interested in conducting an election, we know at this point, for at least two ballot questions, one of which is the topic of the discussion here today, and the other has to do with a charter amendment regarding mayoral elections. And so for the last three general election cycles, the city has approached the county to ask if it would be possible for the county ballot to contain the city's questions. And there's a lot of good reasons why we would want to do that if we can. The main reason being that it's always better not to conduct multiple elections. It's easier for the voter. It saves the taxpayers dollars because if the city is not able to put its questions on the county ballot, then they will have to conduct a separate election. But the reality is that the county has its obligations. My office has its obligations for the elections that we're conducting. And we also have some logistical limitations that we're working under. The reality of conducting elections the way that we do in today's day and age. So, for example, we print ballots on demand at polling locations, and that's how we're able to conduct vote center elections, where you can vote at any polling location for early voting or election day. And that's how we've conducted elections in Bernalillo County for the last three general election cycles. The reality is that we're limited to printing a 19-inch ballot. That is the biggest size of a ballot that there is a printer that exists that we can have at a polling location. Otherwise, you're talking about a big industrial-sized printer that would print in bulk and in advance.
Why can't it be two pages?
So the challenge of doing a two-page ballot is it really can affect the integrity of the election process in terms of being able to make sure that everything is adding up. So when we have one page ballot and one ballot to one voter, what we are able to do is at the end of every voting day, we are able to completely and 100% accurately account for every single ballot that has been cast, be able to tag that back to each voter that a ballot was issued for. If a ballot was spoiled, we were able to navigate that. If we have multi-page ballots, we end up creating a scenario in which we are not able to quantify that one-to-one scenario. And it's really important, again, for the integrity of the election process and to be able to say on the back end of the process that we have exactly as many ballots counted as cast. So we would tend to shy away from that. Now, that is a solution that I know people have been interested in for a long time. It's something that I am interested in finding a solution to. It's not something that we can do on the quick with 89 days before Election Day. It's something that I would like to look into in the future, however.
So what about axing another ballot initiative? Why is this the one that's on the chopping block?
You know, that's really not a question for me, to be perfectly honest with you, Marissa. There are policymakers that are responsible for making these decisions. I'm an administrative office. At the end of the day, I am responsible to the statutes that prescribe the work that I'm supposed to do for this election and to the county commission, who is ultimately responsible for making any determinations about what other questions may go on the ballot. So that's really a question, I think, for both city and county policymakers.
And that's where it is right now, right? It's city, county officials are making the call.
Yeah, they're going to be deciding what, if any, additional questions go on the ballot. The county commission has yet to provide its own election resolution. There are several questions that the county is interested in posing before the voters, traditional questions such as general obligation bonds, mill levy. There's a unified county charter, an urban county charter initiative that the county is contemplating proposing to the voters. So they have to make those decisions first, and then at that point, or maybe concurrently to that, they'll make a decision about whether they would like to assist the city with its ballot questions. But I just want to make the point again, the city has its own election processes. The city can hold a special election. The city is able to conduct elections. The only thing it can't do is conduct an election within a certain time frame around a general election. That is prohibited by state statute.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time this morning. I want to take a call real quick from Red in Sandia Park. Good morning, Red.
Hello. Thank you.
Hi. You're on the air.
I think, I heard this on the air today, and I just want to say I support something like that. I was an elder caregiver, Alzheimer's dementia patients mostly, and for 11 years, and I saw five women fired, mothers, because they got that call from daycare that said, hey, you got to come get your kid and take him to the hospital. And my boss was like, pick your kid or pick your job. Well, that put five families into turmoil, and I just don't think it right. And you know, y'all keep talking about low-wage earners. You know, that wasn't that much of a low-wage job, but still, as a healthcare worker, we never had sick pay. Mm-hmm. You know, and then when I did get sick after 11 years, of course I got fired. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a lot of people. We have a large elder community in Albuquerque, and it's very hard to find somebody that will take care of the old, you know, the elders decently. You know, I did see a lot of people in those 11 years that got fired for, you know, some of the things they did, and that was exactly correct. But when children get sick and you're going to lose your job because you're going to take care of your child, that's just not right. So, you know, I wish I lived in the city so I could vote for this, but I always have to work in the city, so I support that. So this is why I'm calling. So,
all right. Well, thanks for your call, Red. We're going to talk to Kathy in Albuquerque. Good morning, Kathy.
Hi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Well, I just got off work, and I was listening to this on the way home, and I've been on, I have been affected by this. I am a nurse, so I'm not low income. I totally agree with the caller right before me. Where I work at this facility, you don't have sick time. If you call in, it does not matter what it's for. You will get written up, and your job is threatened. I totally agree with her. I've seen people lose their jobs, and they were genuinely sick. I had my knee go out where I couldn't even barely walk, and I was written up for missing time. And it happens all the time, and it pretty much makes me sick. And they get away with it, but you're threatened that you're going to lose your job. To the point lately, I'm thinking of just moving out of the state. Because it's ridiculous. I've also seen people come in sick, including myself, where you pass it from employee to employee, and guess what? You pass it to the patients, too. But if you call in, you will get written up, and so many write-ups, you will lose your job. It's wrong.
All right. Well, thanks so much for your call this morning, Kathy. We're talking about paid sick leave for workers. This is the KUNM Call-In Show, and I'm Marisa DeMarco. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
It's summertime. The living may not be so easy, but getting rid of your old car, truck, or RV is really easy. Just call KUNM's vehicle donation program at 888-KUNM-CAR. We'll get your car picked up for free and sold. Afterward, we'll send the letter you'll need to claim your generous tax deduction, and we'll send you a welcome letter as a new member of KUNM. Just call 888-KUNM-CAR. It's so summertime easy. That's 888-586-6227. Support comes from Carlsbad Caverns in celebration of the National Park Service's centennial. Carlsbad Caverns is home to some of the world's largest caverns and part of America's great gift to itself, the national parks. Details at carlsbadcavernscentennial.com.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Marisa DeMarco, and today we're talking about an ordinance that might go before Albuquerque voters requiring businesses to provide paid sick leave to their employees. I want to take a quick call from Ivy in Albuquerque. Good morning, Ivy.
Good morning. My name's Ivy Rizzo, and I own Fondo Bread. And, you know, my business has been successful for 20 years, and we have, you know, we've done this for our employees. And I've only ever seen benefit from it.
Yeah.
You know, and as a mother, I think this is so important. You know, I think we lament the place that we're in as far as taking care of our children in New Mexico systemically. How do we get ourselves back up into a place that we can be proud of? This is a really simple way that we can do it. And I know that businesses can do it.
All right. Well, thanks for your call this morning, Ivy. I want to point out that the American Public Health Association says the U.S. is way behind other developed countries when it comes to leave. And this leads to the spread of infectious disease. Even H1N1 back in 2010 went a lot further, 7 million people further, because folks went to work sick, according to the Public Health Association. We've got Will Athus on the line. He's a professor with UNM's College of Population Health, who specializes in occupational health. Good morning, Will.
Good morning, Marisa.
What are some of the possible public health effects of not having paid sick leave available to workers?
Well, let me say that the American Public Health Association came out in support with an official policy statement in 2013. And since that time, a great deal of compelling evidence has emerged regarding the positive public health benefits from universal paid sick leave. You mentioned influenza and the spread of flu, particularly during the season. We also have colds, which people suffer from. I think on an individual level, everybody's familiar with getting a cold or a flu and their decreased productivity, how bad they feel, how bad their children feel. A number of things have been mentioned by the prior speakers already, in terms of restaurants, the spread of foodborne disease through restaurants as fast food and sit-down restaurants. The last caller referred to health care and the provision of health care both for children, middle-aged adults, but also our elderly. The transmission of GI infections has been demonstrated to likely be increased in the absence of paid sick leave. Other outcomes have been looked at. The National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health has looked at non-fatal occupational injuries, a study there, and they found there is a 28% reduction, sort of across the board, if you will, in non-fatal occupational injuries in workers with paid sick leave. And so there's an obvious benefit across a number of different health outcome domains that paid sick leave has been demonstrated in. It's probably one of the reasons why the majority of developed countries, as well as a number of states, as well as a number of municipalities here in the U.S., have all passed laws and ordinances requiring one form or another of paid sick leave. So the arguments that the business community presents have some value in terms of the economic costs and concerns about that. In many ways, those arguments tend to be speculative. I haven't seen a great deal of evidence indicating those adverse outcomes in terms of economics. The fact that ordinances have been successfully passed and implemented and are ongoing in many municipalities across the U.S. suggests that it's a pattern which has a positive benefit, which a number of your call-in participants have underscored.
What do you think of what Will's saying here, Jason?
You know, one of the things, you know, he brought up saying that sort of the negative economic effects are speculative. What we've seen is in Connecticut, which passed a statewide mandated paid leave, studies have looked at that since they passed, and what they've actually seen is a reduction in employee hours. 24 hours, which is about 3 days, so you're looking at over half of the work week. And when we're talking about those disruptions in pay, again, that's evidence showing that these leave mandate policies do have a disruption in pay, especially for the low-income workers.
And economics plays a factor in public health too, right, Will?
Of course. Studies have demonstrated cost savings through reduced medical care costs, reduced visits to the ER in the case of occupational settings, increased worker productivity. We've got worker to co-worker spread. We've got, as mentioned, workers who interface with the public through restaurants, through health care. All of those are avenues of transmission, which in particularly bad years of the flu, as you've mentioned, with H1N1, that health care costs can really go up dramatically. So the World Health Organization and the U.S. Centers for Disease Control have a measure we refer to as social distancing. It's a measure to limit contact in order to reduce transmission of infectious disease, particularly during flu outbreaks and whatnot. that's a cornerstone element of basic public health practice, and one which would be greatly facilitated, and particularly in return terms of reducing costs, with some form of universal paid sick leave. So, indeed, there's opposing sides in terms of cost, but then you just have to weigh out the cost. And also you have to weigh out the societal benefits here, too. Andrea referred to matters which really reflect on the interconnectedness of our society. We have expectations to go to a safe workplace. We have societal expectations to send our children to safe schools, to go out and eat safe food as customers, to have safe care of our elderly. Well, that doesn't come without a cost.
All right.
So these have to be balanced out. And my view is that the fact that these programs have been successfully deployed, I applaud the efforts in Albuquerque to bring forth this ordinance to the public.
All right. Well, thanks so much for your time today, Will Athus. I want to take a call from Jan in Mountain Air. Good morning, Jan.
Hey, Marisa. I'm tired of the financial hardship. You know, what about human hardship? And why is it always going to be cut hours or cut benefits or cut this? Why is it always on the shoulders of labor to get what they should have? You know what? If I have to pay 25 cents or 50 cents more for a hamburger to know that the person fixing it and serving it isn't ill, I'm going to pay that quarter. I'm going to pay that 50 cents. And I have a 94-year-old mom in health care, and anybody with any kind of brain knows that elderly have not-so-strong immune systems. Now, if my mom's monthly has to go up by 50 bucks, even 100 bucks, to know that the people taking care of her are not going to transfer their illness to her, I'm going to pay that. It doesn't have to come out of their hours. It doesn't have to come out of their wages. It doesn't have to come out of their benefits. Why aren't they adjusting it to the consumer? You haven't even talked about that. But I'm sorry, I'm kind of angry about this, and I'm trying to temper it, but I'm tired of workers taking the brunt of everything. It's just not right.
What do you think about what she's saying, Andrea?
I think that Jan exemplifies what we hear on the doors, is that people in our community want to see each other doing better. They see each other as human beings. They don't see workers as a burden or as children or as, you know, as not being important and valued despite the wages that they make. Our families can't wait. Our families can't wait for another election. Our families can't wait, for the market to decide to make paid sick leave a benefit or to increase wages. The reality is we have the lowest number of people who have paid sick leave in the country, in this state. The reality is that we haven't recovered from this recession since 2008. And, you know, we blame workers for that, and we blame the minimum wage ordinance, we blame paid sick leave. But the reality is the recession that we've been in happened long before these ordinances came up. And so we keep sort of using these, and I don't mean we, I'm sorry, actually mean Mr. Espinosa uses these sort of very divisive scare tactics, which actually cloud the issue. And the issue is that we need healthy workers to have a healthy workforce in our city.
We're coming to the end of the hour today. You can find more of our coverage of sick leave online at KUNM.org. Thank you for joining us on the KUNM Call-In Show. Andrea Serrano, Deputy Director of Organizers in the Land of Enchantment. Jason Espinosa, President of the New Mexico Association of Commerce and Industry. And everyone that we talked to on the phone. If you missed any of our program, or if you'd like to share it with friends, the audio of this show will be posted on our website, KUNM.org, where you can also find previous call-in shows. Thanks to Marino Spencer and Ramon Garcia, our engineers today. Kaveh Movahead screened your calls. Sarah Gustavus produces the show, and Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. This show is part of KUNM's Public Health New Mexico project. It's funded by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Con Alma Health Foundation.